Welcome back to the third episode of Just Scrap Radio on BJPenn.com. I'm your host, Cole Shelton. This episode, a pretty good show. Starting off, we have American Top Team owner Dan Lambert, who talks about UFC 251, what Jorge Masvidal, what's next for him. We touch on Dustin Poirier, Joanna Jacek. Then we briefly touch on Colby Covington, whether or not he's still managing him, what their relationship is like, because those two used to be inseparable, but ever since Covington left ATT, we haven't heard much about it. And then finally, we touch on all the positive COVID tests at American Top Team, Marlon Moraes, Mike Brown, Pedro Munhoz, like the list goes on and on about what American Top Team can do and what the thing about doing, where the thing about buying a test machine and testing all the fighters every once a week. Next, we're joined by Peter Sobota, who takes on Cowboy Oliveira on the Fight Island card on July 25th. Really intriguing matchup. It's Sobota's first fight in quite a while. His last fight was a loss to Leon Edwards. He's a guy, last fight of his deal, where he admits if he loses, he's probably going to get cut and probably retire from the sport. He's one of the few German fighters in the UFC roster. He's an excited guy. This fight, he's an underdog, but this fight shouldn't disappoint. Probably going to end by stoppage, I'd assume. But man, this is fight of the night written all over. Peter Sobota was a great guy, too. Great interview. And finally, we close things out with Ricky Bandejas, who headlines Bellator's return show on July 24th against Sergio Pettis. We talk about his training, what he's been up to. The Pettis fight, what's it like for him to be the main event of this Bellator's big return? And then this fight being a title eliminator where he gets to fight the winner of Patrick Mixon Archuleta, which was supposed to be on this July 24th card. It would be a rematch for Bandejas, but he says he wants to fight either one of them again because he doesn't think he showed his best. And we also touch on his rivalry with SBG Island where he knocked out James Gallagher, beats Franz Malombo there. So they have a rivalry. He thought he'd be fighting another SBG Island guy, but Bandejas was great, and thank you for watching, and I hope you enjoy the show. All right, we're joined by American Top Team owner Dan Lambert. Dan, how's it going?
It's going all right. How you doing?
I'm doing well. Let's just start off with the man of the past, pay-per-view, Jorge Masvidal. When Gilbert Burns fell out, did you think Masvidal would be stepping in?
I found out Gilbert dropped out because Masvidal called me at like 1 o'clock in the morning. And said, "Hey, I'll take that fight. Let's make some calls."
And then once that happened, like they were obviously that was Masvidal's fight to get the first time, and they couldn't come to agreement on the pay. Did you think the UFC would come around to what he wanted?
I didn't want him to. I tried talking him out of it when he called me and said that. I'm like, dude, that's like less than a week from today in Abu Dhabi, like halfway around the world. Are you out of your mind? And he said, "No, I'm taking that fight. It's going to happen." And I'm like, "All right, man. Well, you know, I'll make a call and let them know you want it to happen and tell them to call your guys and start working on it." But, you know, I wasn't a big fan of that fight happening on that kind of notice. There's a big difference between a guy who's around the gym and a guy who's in the gym in a training camp. But, you know, I think George did pretty damn well in that fight, showed he's got a lot of tools. And obviously, it looks like the show was a huge success. So long term, it's probably going to work out pretty well for him.
Was part of the game plan for Jorge was to just try to get Usman out early because the gas tank, like he even admitted after, he didn't think the gas tank could go five rounds.
Yeah, I think most people close to George thought he was going to have to get the job done inside of a couple of rounds.
And he's been training with Bo Nickel. Is he going to be a guy that's going to be an American Top Team once he finishes his college career?
Yeah, well Bo's college career is done.
Or he's got the Olympics, right?
Right, he's training for the Olympics. But we're opening an ATT gym up at College Station. And Bo's going to be based out of there. We're going to send up a couple of high-level coaches. The gym's plans are being constructed, drawn up right now. Hopefully the construction's going to be done beginning of next year. And we're gonna have an ATT affiliate up there, and we're gonna hopefully interact a lot with the college program they've got up there, and a lot of the guys that come over to David Taylor's wrestling club after they graduate college to get ready for international competitions and the Olympics. And we think it's gonna be a crazy pipeline of talent.
How important was Bo in this little small camp for Jorge?
I mean, small camp. I don't call it a camp. I mean, you find out on like Saturday morning, you're fighting the following week, and in Abu Dhabi. I mean, I don't even think they had the deal done till Sunday or late Sunday or Monday or whatever it was. So, I mean, there was no camp. Bo was down, you know, the month prior for a couple of weeks because, you know, at one point we thought we were going to start getting ready and that fight could happen. So he was down for a little while and brought a couple of the other guys from Penn State down. And, you know, but that was just more of a, hey, man, we're doing this new gym. Why don't you come down and start wrestling a little bit and meeting everybody and, you know, start the integration process. And while you're here, get some work in with Masvidal, because at some point in the future, we're looking for a title fight. So, you know, I mean, Bo would be an amazing asset on a full camp for George for a fight against Usman. And I think George's wrestling is underrated. I think at one point during the fight, I think they said he had stuffed like 7 of 8 takedowns. And the one that he didn't stuff was, you know, off of a kick that got caught in the first round. So I think George's wrestling is really underrated. He's got really good takedown defense. He's really good up against the fence or the wall. And I think that will behoove him pretty well if he ever gets that rematch.
Well, that's what I was going to say, is a lot of people were saying, oh, Masvidal's just going to get mauled. Usman's going to take him down over and over again. Do you think there is a lot of disrespect for Masvidal's ground game? Everyone kind of just thinks, oh, he's this boxer. He can't do anything on the ground.
I just people don't haven't really seen it. You know, they haven't really seen him in there with someone who, you know, was at Usman's level and with that type of strategy that Usman was going to bring. You know, George is not an easy guy to take down, and George has some really good hips. If you do get him down, he's hard to hold down. You know, a big chunk of that fight was up against the cage, and I don't think that was a result of George not being able to get off the cage. I just think at that point in the fight, George just didn't have any gas left in the tank and didn't really have any legs under him. So, you know, what's the point of fighting hard to get the break when there's really nothing you can do with it anyway, because you're sapped out? So I think George just accepted the position against the fence for a large portion of that fight, because, you know, not because he couldn't get off, just because he didn't really have any tools left if he did get off.
How different do you think that fight is with Jorge having a full camp?
I think it'd be a very different fight. I think it'd be a very different fight. I don't think Usman bullies him around. I don't think Usman gets him down very often. I don't think he holds him down very often. He's going to have to win that fight standing, I think, for a significant portion. And, you know, that's no small task against George.
Say Jorge comes up to you in the gym and says, Dan, whatever you want me to do next, I'll do. Like, what would you advise him to do? Because there's a lot of options. He could try to get that Usman rematch. He could fight like a Conor, make that a big fight. The Diaz rematch is there. Like, what would you want him to do next?
I mean, you really don't have a say in those things. It's what's going on with the UFC. And, you know, George probably has a much better seat at the table now and dictating what happens going forward now that he's proven himself to be a pretty substantial draw. If I had my druthers, I always want my guys to make as much money as possible. And Conor McGregor is the biggest fight in the world for anybody. So if I had my druthers, that would be his next fight. If George had his, he'd probably go for a rematch with Usman, because right now the belt's probably more important than the money, because he just got a really nice payday.
We saw the reported pay-per-view numbers north of 1.3 million buys. Like, do you think Conor Masvidal would be the biggest fight in UFC history?
It would be up there. It would if not the biggest, it'd probably be the second to Khabib and Conor. You know, if George were defending the title against Conor, could you imagine if George had won that, or if George gets a rematch and wins it, and then he puts both belts up against the Conor? Yeah, I think that would by far be the biggest fight in UFC history. But George is a draw. George is legit. People want to see George. People are buying into George's story, and obviously Conor's Conor. So yeah, that's a big money fight.
Is it weird for you where Jorge's been doing this for 17 years, something like that, and he's just becoming this massive star in years 16 and 17? No other pro sports do you see someone become their massive star so late in their career.
It's by far the craziest thing I've ever seen in the 20-plus years we've been doing this. He calls it the resurrection. I don't have a better word for it. I mean, I've seen that guy have ups, I've seen him have downs, and to put it all together and go on this run is just unbelievable. I have no words for it.
And then let's talk Amanda Nunes defending the featherweight belt at UFC 250, and then she said she doesn't know if she's going to continue. Is she in the gym training, or is she taking time just spending time with the family?
Amanda does a lot of the family stuff after fights. So, you know, she came to the gym right after the fight, you know, a little celebration with everybody, talking to everybody. But, you know, she hasn't been back training since. You know, they're getting ready to have a baby, so they're getting a lot of stuff together back at home anyway. But she lives right down the street, and I spoke with her the other day. She's good, and when something comes around, she'll start training sooner or later, probably sooner rather than later, because people just get bored getting home. You know, right after a fight, everybody's like, man, the last thing I want to do is go back to the gym right now. I want more time to, you know, relax. But, you know, then you get that time to relax. You're like, shit, this is kind of boring. I want to go back to the gym. So, you know, she'll get back in there and just, you know, just have some fun, break a sweat, stay in shape, and then figure out what's coming up. You know, I mean, they're going to have a baby later this year, probably. I think it's October. And maybe September. And after that, you know, she'll get a little acclimation process for that. But I think those juices will start flowing and she'll want to get in soon after that.
Would you be surprised if she doesn't fight again?
Yeah, I'd be really surprised. I mean, you spend your whole life busting your ass and working so hard to get to the point where she is right now, where you can make some really good money. And to do all that work to get there and only reap the benefits for a couple of fights, it doesn't really make the most sense. And it's, you know, she's married now, she's having a kid, and she's in a position to go on a run now to take care of herself and her family for the rest of her life and take care of her kid and take care of her kids' kids. I would be surprised if she didn't take advantage of that.
What do you think is next for her? Do you think she drops back down to 35 and defends that belt, or do you think she likes staying at 45?
I think if she had her druthers, she'd stay at 45 just because, you know, nobody likes cutting weight. The 35 division certainly deeper than the 45 division is. I would guess that she would probably flip-flop, do a fight at 35, then do a fight at 45, then do a fight at 35, then do a fight at 45. You probably couldn't do that as a champ in the men's divisions because they're all so deep and so stacked, and they probably couldn't put those divisions on hold, you know, and only have a champ defend the title once a year or so. But I think they could do that in the female divisions because there's not a lot of talent at 45, at least not under contract. And it'll take a while to build a contender. And then they got to sort through the contenders at 35. And maybe by the time she fights in that division every other fight, they would have had somebody primed and ready to go.
Where do you rank her? She's obviously clear-cut the best women's fighter of all time. Where do you rank her as all-time GOAT, male or female? She's the only UFC fighter to defend both belts. Her legacy speaks for itself, beating Cyborg, Rousey, Tate, Holm, all former champions. Like, where do you put her in that conversation?
It's not only just beating those names that you just threw out there, but it's how she beat them. I mean, Ronda and Cyborg didn't go a minute. Neither one of them. You know, Misha, you know, she could be a Hall of Famer. She didn't get out of that first round. Holly didn't get out of the first round. I mean, she's not just beating the best of the best. She's starching them. So yeah, there's no question she's the GOAT female. And, you know, I put her in the top five fighters of all time. I put her in the same conversation with the GSPs and the Anderson Silvas of the world. She's that good.
And another female fighter we saw is Joanna. She obviously had that legendary fight with Weili Zhang earlier this year. What were your takeaways from that fight? Because I was watching that thing, and I'm like, after the second round, I'm like, they can't keep this pace up to the third. And after the third, I'm like, they can't keep this pace up in the fourth. Like, what were your thoughts on that fight?
I was clearly the best female fight of all time, but I think it goes above and beyond that. It was just an amazing fight, period. It was a great fight, really competitive fight. You know, I think if you go back and watch it, if she didn't have that swelling in that fifth round, I think judges were giving more credit to the champ for the shots she was landing in that fifth round just because of the damage Joanna was showing. I thought Joanna won that fifth round, which was the deciding round of the fight. And I think if she wasn't showing the damage, they might not have scored the round the way they did. But it was a great fight, and I think everybody wants to see it again. I know Rose is coming off an impressive performance, and I think the UFC is leaning in the direction of giving her the next shot. So I think Joanna's just going to sit back and see what happens. I don't think a lot makes sense for Joanna other than another fight for the title.
Yeah, she's in this weird spot where she's beaten most of the top-ranked girls at strawweight. So would you be surprised if she doesn't fight again until she gets another title shot?
I'd be surprised if she did fight again other than a title shot. I don't know of another fight that makes sense.
What about her going up to 125? Because we saw her fight for Shevchenko, and there's a lot of new fresh matchups there. Do you think she's focused on 115?
I think Joanna wants to be a champion. She's been there, done that, been around a long time, accomplished so much. She's got a lot of other stuff going on in her life from a financial standpoint outside of the cage. So I really think the only thing that makes sense to bring her back to a fight is a title fight. And she's not getting that title fight at 125. I mean, people already saw that. I don't think anybody's clamoring to see that fight again. And you know, she made the weight. She didn't have a problem with her weight cut for the last fight. So I think that's the weight class for her. And if she comes back, I think that's what you'll see, a title fight for her at that, in that weight class. And if not, I think she'll just do what she's doing.
I just want to touch on a few other things. Is Dustin Poirier obviously had that incredible fight with Dan Hooker. What do you think should be next for him? A lot of people are throwing out Tony Ferguson. I think that'd be a wild fight.
I mean, I'd pay money to see Dustin fight anybody. I'd pay money to see Tony fight anybody. I'm not sure that fight makes the most sense in the world with Tony coming off a loss and Dustin coming off such a big win. You know, Dustin is a guy that it seems like every fight he has is an incredible fight like that. So there's a lot of good matchups for him and exciting fan-friendly fights for him. But I think Dustin, you know, is probably looking to see what happens with Khabib and Gaethje. And if Gaethje were to win that fight, I mean, who would make more sense than Dustin after having, you know, taken Gaethje out and coming off a big win like that? Again, Conor's name's got to be thrown in there because it's the Conor effect. You know, whatever, I think whatever Conor wants to do, Conor's going to do. So, you know, I could see Conor getting the winner of Gaethje and Khabib. I could see Dustin immediately fighting Gaethje if Gaethje were to win that fight. I don't know if Dustin and Khabib is a fight that the UFC is interested in running right back. Maybe something has to happen in the meantime. So I don't really know what to expect for Dustin's next fight. I think he's sitting back and just going to wait and see what happens with that fight. And I know Dustin wants a title fight more than he wants anything. You know, I've even heard Dustin's name linked to Conor again. So I don't know. I mean, he wants to make money and he wants to win a title. So hopefully one of those two things will be thrown at him.
Well, that's what I was going to say is obviously Dustin Conor fought a couple years ago at featherweight. Conor got an early knockout, but how much different do you think that fight would be at lightweight and how they're fighting right now?
Dustin's a completely different fighter at 55 than he was at 45. I mean, your body can only take so much as far as, you know, weight cutting leading up to a fight. And Dustin didn't just cut weight when it was in the lead up to a fight. I mean, Dustin had to live a lifestyle to make 145 where he's like fucking cutting almonds in half between camps. You know, it was just so hard on his body and that makes it tough. And I think he's much healthier. I think he's stronger at 55 and I think he takes a punch a lot better at 55 than he does at 45. So yeah, Dustin's a whole different animal at that weight class. So I think the fight would have to be different.
And at ATT, we've seen a couple people test positive, and that's something that's going around the entire world. Is there anything you can do as a gym to try to like prevent it? Or is it just, you guys really have no control over it?
Well, there's nothing we can do to stop it. There's nothing, you know, anybody can do to stop it right now. They will figure that out, but we've gotten better as time has gone on. We do a lot of things at our gym to keep it as safe as possible. You know, nobody gets in our gym without having a temperature check. We had 80 people tested at our gym last week. Turns out I don't really have a ton of faith in the particular test that they were using. So I've got a couple of proposals right now coming in on a better test. And my goal is to have everybody at the gym tested once a week. I'm actually looking to buy the machine that reads the swab results so I can get the swab test done and get the results the same day. We've probably had 40 fighters tested and 40 fighters and coaches tested down at the county facility that does the public testing, but it takes so long to get the results and people are sitting out so long. We make sure that anybody in the gym that has any symptoms whatsoever stays out of the gym until they're cleared with the test. You know, we do everything we can to make it as safe as possible, but you're going to have people get sick. You know, when you got that many people, you're going to have people get sick. And I'm not even sure I believe the results of a lot of the tests. I mean, Mike Brown and Pedro Munhoz tested positive on a Sunday out in Las Vegas before the trip to Abu Dhabi, got in a car on Monday, drove back, got home Wednesday, Thursday morning, had them both swabbed, and they both came back negative. So just had their blood drawn Monday morning and sent to a lab to do a third test and should have those results today. So if I had to guess, neither of those guys even had it. It was a false positive. So it's just such a new virus that nobody really knows exactly what to do to combat it or how it acts and how reliable all these tests are. I mean, you saw the thing with Figueredo, you know, testing positive and then testing negative, and now he's over there, and who knows if he's going to test positive or negative now that he's over there. Nobody even knows if that fight's going to happen this weekend. So there's a lot of uncertainty out there, but you just do whatever you can given the science of the day.
And have you had to limit, like, how many people are in the gym, like only making it pro fighters, or are you still able to hold some classes?
Oh no, we've closed to the public since before there was a local shutdown, and we have not reopened to the public. And I don't know when we reopen to the public. I'm going to wait until it's very, very safe, and I'm very comfortable that it is safe to bring the public back. And then I'm probably going to wait another month or two after that and let everybody else do it and see how that works. We're only open to the public. We decided to get rid of our after-school program permanently. I think we just sold the 5 vans we have that pick kids up from school and bring them over to the gym, just because it just brings so much traffic into the gym. And it's not only the kids that are coming there, but it's the counselors, and then it's their parents and their brothers and sisters coming to pick them up. And it's just too much extra traffic into the gym. So we're not even going to start that back up if and when we do reopen our regular public classes. Right now it's pros only. We try to spread the classes out, keep as few people there as possible, do our temperature checks, make sure people are getting tested, and hope for the best.
And just last thing, I know, are you still co-managing Colby, even though he's not at the gym?
No.
Have you talked to him since then, or is that, or no?
I have not talked to Colby for probably a couple of months. You know, once he made the announcement that he was going to leave, I haven't spoken to him. I'm sure I will. I've got no ill will towards Colby. I think he made the right decision for him and his career and going to do his own thing. You know, Colby did a lot of his own thing even when he was there anyway. So I think it worked out the right way.
And just last thing, that no trash talking policy you implemented back then, is that still a rule in ATT?
I guess it's still a rule. It's kind of a rule that you don't really need without Colby being there, because never really had that problem with anybody. We've had lots of people fight each other and never had that become an issue, but it became an issue. You know, Colby's a polarizing figure, and he's got a unique personality and a unique marketing approach. And it made life a little difficult in a big gym structure. I think it's worked for Colby. I mean, he's made a lot more money since he developed that character and gotten way farther in his career than he would have otherwise. I just don't know if he needed that character inside our gym. You know, personally, I think he should have stuck to shitting on Brazil and supporting Donald Trump, and probably kept it at that, and it would have worked out a lot better for us. But, you know, he's his own man. He's made his own decisions, and I think it's working for him, and I think he probably wouldn't change anything if he could go back and do it all over.
Just a quick one is, would you like to see Covington fight Masvidal, or would you not want that to happen just because of your relationships with both them?
I want George to make the most money George can make. I want Colby to make the most money Colby can make. I'd like George to win a title. Yeah, I'm not clamoring to see that fight. At one point, I told both of them, I hope they go and they do fight and beat the shit out of each other, just because I was getting so sick of what was going on. But yeah, I don't like seeing guys that I'm friends with or close with, you know, or guys that are at our gym fighting each other. I hate it. It's kind of a no-win situation for us. Sometimes it's unavoidable because it's either for a title or it's for a number one shot. Sometimes it's unavoidable just because the guys want to do it. You know, JDS, and he's fighting Jairzinho coming up, and that wasn't a you know, take it or leave it offer where it was the only fight available for either guy. But, you know, they wanted it. They both liked it. They both liked the fight. They thought it was a high-profile fight that would do good things for them. I'm not going to tell two guys they can't fight if they don't want to. You know, it makes it a little difficult at the gym at times, you know, for some guys, not for those two. They don't give a shit. JDS said, hey, you want to spar while leading up to the fight, which I thought was kind of ridiculous. Didn't happen. But, you know, some guys deal with it differently. But, you know, as a rule, I don't like seeing our guys fight each other.
All right. Well, Dan, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
My pleasure. Anytime.
Yeah, have a good one. Joined by UFC welterweight Peter Sobota. Peter, how are you doing?
I'm very good. Nice to meet you, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, no problem. Thank you for doing this. Before we get into your fight, you haven't fought since you lost to Leon Edwards in 2018. I know you're supposed to fight Alessio De Chirico, but you had to pull with an injury. Like, how serious was that injury then? How long was the recovery?
So this last injury wasn't very serious. It was an infection in my elbow. So I just had to take off like 4 weeks or something. And we tried to make the fight on a later date. Like we tried to push the fight back for like 2 or 3 weeks, but Alessio didn't agree to that. So they searched a new opponent for it. So for him, so this fight was off. Then the next chance was in UFC London in March of this year, but the whole, they were looking like for an opponent to try to make the fight with Gunnar Nelson, but then the whole event got canceled. So there was another bad luck. And actually, like I was out for 2 years and it was like more reason than just the injury. In these 2 years, I became father of 2 children. So this was also a big thing. I own a big gym. So we moved with the gym to a different location and it took also like months to do that. So yeah, I wasn't fighting, but I was still pretty busy.
Was it like, you obviously had the kids, which congratulations about that, but was it frustrating not being able to fight? Because you are a fighter after all, and fighting is what you do.
Of course, it's very difficult, especially for me. Fighting was always, I do it because of the passion, you know, I do it because I love it, not because I have to do it. That was always the case, because I have a good education, I'm running 2 businesses, you know, I don't need to fight because of the money. It's just something what I love to do. And the priorities in the last 2 years, I had different priorities, you know, so I couldn't do what I love. And this is why I'm so happy right now that I have a fight coming up on such a cool place against such a cool opponent. So I'm feeling good.
And let's get into that. You fighting, obviously, Cowboy Oliveira, who's a big name. When you got the call to fight him, like, what was your reaction? Because a lot of people know him, and he's always in those exciting fights.
So I was very, very happy about the chance. You know, after a 2 year break, coming back with such a great opponent on such a cool event on the island, it was just awesome. You know, I know my hands will get dirty in this fight. It will be a tough fight. You know, he comes to fight, so. It's everything I could ask for.
This is obviously, like you said, really intriguing fight on Fight Island too. When it was announced you're fighting on Fight Island, did you think it was going to be Abu Dhabi, or were you expecting one of these tropical locations that everyone is kind of talking about?
No, I talked to my coaches and my team, and we were doing like bets, and I already, my number one option was in the Emirates, so I didn't know Abu Dhabi or whatever, but I thought it's somewhere in the Emirates. Or I thought maybe in somewhere in Northern Europe, maybe like a Scandinavian island or something. But yeah, Yas Island, it's pretty cool.
And you're a guy, you obviously were in the UFC really young. You fought like UFC 99. You obviously had, you went 0-3, got cut, worked your way back up. Like, how much different and better of a fighter do you think you are now compared to your first stint in the UFC?
Oh, man, I'm a completely different person. You know, it was such a long time ago, and it was, how can I explain? On my first UFC run, I really wasn't on that level. It was more like a good luck for me just being a part of the show, because the UFC came to Germany for the first time ever, and they were looking for a German fighter. And, you know, I was one of very few German professional fighters. And in this year, I had a 6-fight winning streak with all 6 fights coming by finish. So it was good luck, you know, that they picked me up. But I wasn't ready for that level. And you could see it, you know, I was hanging in there. I lost 3 tough decisions. And it was very, how can I say? It was difficult because it was my dream to be a UFC fighter. I lost the contract, but I never gave up. You know, for me, it was clear I need to put in more work, develop as an athlete, develop as a fighter. And that's what I did. You know, I kept winning on the like European local shows, and I got a second chance from the UFC.
And then in your second chance, you've really capitalized it, went over submission over Stephen Kennedy. You have a decision over Nicholas Dalby, who just beat Cowboy very recently, and a knockout win over Ben Saunders. Like, you obviously have some big wins, but Cowboy, do you think he's, other than Leon Edwards, is this biggest name opponent you fought?
Maybe he's one of the biggest names, but I'm sure he's not my toughest opponent yet. He's dangerous. He comes to fight, but he has also like some weaknesses. Which make it good for me. But it's a good name, you know. He's very popular, and he's a cool guy. You know, he's a cool guy. I like him. I like his style of fighting, and I like his personality. So it's a good thing to fight him.
And your grappling, I think, is really underrated. You have a lot of submission wins. Your wrestling is pretty impressive. Like, is this a fight you think your wrestling grappling is going to play a factor? Because obviously, we know how dangerous Cowboy Oliveira is on the feet.
Yeah, he's a high level, good striker. He has like not the cleanest technique. It's more like wild. So I have to be careful about this. But I'm pretty sure my grappling is superior to his grappling. And when I get the chance to take him down, I will do that for sure.
How do you see this fight playing out? Because it can go so many different ways. Like, it can be a stand-up fight. It could be one of those you just don him on the ground. Like, how do you see it playing out?
I see a very wild fight, especially in the first round, you know, and that's the, like, that's when he's the most dangerous. It's in the first round, or let's say in the first half of the fight. I need to be careful. He's a wild guy. You know, his hands are pretty low. He holds his hand on the hips, which makes it easier to hit him, but also more difficult to see his punches coming. So I will choose like a more conservative approach, like with my hands high, clean, straight boxing. And whenever I get the chance to go for the takedown, I'll do it, because his jiu-jitsu is definitely one of his weaknesses. You know, he's a scrappy guy, tough guy, explosive. For sure, he's also strong, but I'm talking about his technique, and I see a lot of holes in his grappling, in his jiu-jitsu, and I think I could catch him in the first or second round with a good submission.
Yeah, that's what I was just about to say. You have a lot of finishes. When you normally win, it is by stoppage. Do you think this is, you're just going to get another stoppage win here?
That's what I'm coming for, you know?
And how important is this win for you? Just because you haven't fought in 2 years, your last fight was a loss. Like, just to come back and get a finish win over Cowboy Oliveira, like, how big do you think that is for your career?
You know, I always say to my students also, like, the next fight is always the most important fight, no matter what. So this is the most important fight in my life right now. Especially, it's the last fight on my contract. After this fight, my contract with the UFC ends, and I'm 33 years of age. I haven't fought in over 2 years. So this fight will decide about my future in the UFC. So it's a very big and it's a very important fight. And, you know, if I do a good job and win this fight, I'm sure I will get a new contract. But if it doesn't go my way and I will not get a new UFC contract, I will probably retire, because, you know, I'm fighting professionally for over 15 years. And my goal was to always be a UFC fighter. And I was it for two times, you know. If the UFC will cut me for whatever reason, maybe because I wasn't so active in the last years or whatever, that's probably it.
Well, was there any talk of renegotiating before this fight, or did you take this fight and then try to get the win and then your value is higher and see what happens after this fight?
Yeah. No, there was no negotiations, because I didn't fight for 2 years. You know what I mean? It's such a long, long time. I don't want to negotiate now about a new contract. I just want to show I'm back. I want to show my improved skill set. And after the fight, we can talk.
How do you think the layoff is going to impact you? Because some people say ring rust if you haven't fought a while. You see other fighters saying, oh, that's not a thing. Like, how do you think that time off is going to impact you?
I can say from experience, I had a long layoff before, because I had a pretty serious sickness, and I had a surgery on my stomach. Like, they opened my stomach, I had an infection on my gut, so I had to take like almost 1 year off of any training. So And I came back, and I came back stronger and more successful. And I hope and I think that will be the case as well. You know, the big difference now is I'm hungry. You know, I'm hungry because I hadn't had this feeling, you know, to step in the cage, get my hand raised for a very long time. So I'm hungry for that feeling. Yeah, and I'll do anything. So I think it's a good thing. And especially I'm fighting for such a long time. You know, I'm 33 years. I had my first professional fight at the age of 16. So it's a lot of fights, a lot of training, a lot of injuries, a lot of stress, you know, and a break. It's good for the body and also good for the mind, you know. I was focusing on other things, so I'm coming back. I'm feeling fresh. I'm feeling good, really. And I'm excited. I'm excited for this fight and also excited for my own performance, you know. After such a long time, I'm curious how I will perform. I'm feeling good in the sparring. I'm feeling good in the gym. But, you know, a fight is always something completely different.
And you are an underdog in this fight. Do you pay any attention to that or do you not care if you're the underdog or favorite?
No, man. I told you this before the interview. I'm not paying a lot of attention to what's ever going on. You know, I'm so busy with my training, with my business, with my family, with all that stuff. So I'm not even checking like the odds, like who's the favorite, who's not the favorite, because it doesn't matter. You know, it doesn't matter.
Where do you think a win over Cowboy puts you in this welterweight division? Because obviously your last loss was to Leon Edwards, who is arguably the top three welterweight. Like, do you think a win here gets you a rank guy?
I know it's a very special time. You know, we're having a global pandemic, and also because of this, I'm getting this great fight, I think. You know, of course, I fought some good guys in the past, but remember, I didn't fight for 2 years. And now coming back, fighting on the main card on Fight Island against such a like popular opponent, I think that wouldn't happen if the whole shutdown was a thing. You know, many fighters are not able to train properly. They cannot take a fight because of this whole situation. So yeah, who knows? If I make a good fight, maybe I'll get a ranked opponent. That's what I'm hoping, you know. I'm in the last chapter of my career. I'm 33. I'm not planning to fight at the age of 40, so it's time.
Well, do you think this is kind of your final run to get towards a title shot in the UFC? Like, because you said you've been fighting for a while and you don't know how much longer you have. Like this, do you think this is kind of do or die to make that run?
Probably it is. You know, I will never say never, but probably it is my last chance. You know, if I do good, I keep doing it. If not, maybe it's time to hang up the gloves, but I will decide after the next fight.
And welterweight is a stacked division. Like, do you have your eye on anyone on who you want to fight, or barring you beat Oliveira, is this just kind of who the UFC offers you, assuming you get a new contract?
Yeah, you know, right now I don't feel like I'm in a position to choose opponents, so I'm not doing it. But after my fight, like, I have a list of guys who I would like to fight. Number one is Damian Maia. Number two is Gunnar Nelson. So that would be like my two dream fights. And if I win, or let's say after I win, I will call out one of those guys.
Is that just because you want to test your grappling against those two? Because those two are probably two of the top grapplers in the welterweight division.
I know Damian Maia's grappling is probably better than mine, but you know, it's more like a dream come true, a fight against Damian Maia. Like, me growing up, coming up, he was always one of my favorite fighters. I was always like fascinated how he can win his fights using always the same technique, you know, pressing the guys on the cage, taking the back and choke them out. It was always impressive. And I tried to like learn from him. I bought his DVDs. You know, I was always a fan of him. And for me to challenge against my favorite fighter would be a great thing. And the other thing is with Gunnar Nelson, they say he's the best grappler in Europe, and I want to show that I'm the best grappler in Europe. And so that's the thing.
There aren't many UFC fighters from Germany. So what's it like for you to kind of represent Germany as a whole? Because you have a whole country rooting for you.
Yeah. I mean, MMA is such a small sport in Germany. You could almost say nobody cares. You know, you cannot even see UFC in TV in Germany. You know, it was banned for many years. Like, showing MMA in German TV was illegal. Now they changed the law, so you can see some MMA fights, but it's only at night time, so after like 12 o'clock at night or something. So it's not popular. Of course, the hardcore fans and everybody who's involved in the sport knows me, because, like, you know, I'm an old school fighter. I competed on all the German UFC events and stuff like this. So I get a lot of support from the whole German MMA scene. For example, with sparring partners, you know. Once my fight got announced, I have sparring partners from all across the country coming to my gym, staying at my gym, and helping me to prepare for this fight, which is a great thing. And I'm very thankful for this.
Just last thing, Peter, is you obviously had that layoff. Barring everything goes well, like, how quickly do you want to turn this around? Like, would the ideal world you get another fight in 2020 before the year's up?
Yeah, I have no time to lose. You know, I'm now in a good shape. I'm healthy, no problems. So if I win this fight and I get out of this fight without any injury, I would like to fight as soon as possible.
All right, well, Peter, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Cole, for having me, and best regards to the United States.
All right, we're joined by Bellator bantamweight Ricky Bandejas, who headlines Bellator's big return against Sergio Pettis. Ricky, how's it going?
I'm going good, man. How you been?
I'm doing well. Headlining Bellator's big return, what's that like for you?
It's a lot. It's awesome, you know. As a fighter, your main goal is to headline a big promotion, and let alone on their return, it feels it's exciting, you know. A little extra pressure, but it feels good.
When did you find out about this? Because Bellator's return kind of came out of nowhere.
Easily a good month ago, if not more.
Did you know you'd be the main event at that point?
No, I didn't even know who was on the card. They just told me I was fighting Pettis, and but they were telling me to keep training. I'll have a fight. And then I got Pettis, and then I'm just training hard, getting ready for a fight. Didn't really know when, then found out when. It was like piecing together a puzzle.
Were you training at American Top Team for this camp?
Yeah, somewhat towards the end, because in the beginning, everything was shut down. But a good couple weeks there.
And another big opponent, Sergio Pettis, UFC veteran. When you got that name, what were the emotions like? Because he's a guy a lot of people know.
Excited, man. That's definitely something I want. You know, I want the big names. I want the big following, you know, and he has it. I believe he was number two in the UFC before he, cut from them. So he was in there and he proved himself. So he's definitely a caliber guy, you know, one of the best in the world.
And two fight winning streak, two straight knockouts. How big have those wins been just to snap that losing skid you were on?
Huge, because both of the knockouts, you know, they got a lot of traction, and it feels good after you lose two fights to come back and get back on top, you know, and keep climbing the ladder.
Fighting a non-SBG guy, too. What's that like? Because you've just been the SBG island killer.
Yeah, I know Brian Moore was talking about fighting a lot, so I thought maybe that would have been the next fight. But when they offered Pettis, feels good. You know, it doesn't matter to me. Either guy, I get paid, you know.
And something I found out is on this card, they wanted the vacant bantamweight title fight between Patrick Mix and Juan Archuleta. It seems that fight's going to happen. If it does, who do you favor in that one? Because you fought both of them.
I don't know. You know, like, Pat Mix is the guy that, you give him a second to catch a submission or make a mistake, he'll capitalize. Archuleta, I think, is overall, all around, the better fighter overall, you know. But Pat Mix, you make one mistake with a guy like that, he capitalizes.
And this is being Bellator's promoting this as a title eliminator fight. So if you win, you get a rematch against one of those guys. What's it going to be like to get another crack at them?
It's going to feel good, you know. From where I was then to now, totally different fighter. You know, I'm in a real, you know, I'm at ATT and I get good work. And I'm just mentally, more than anything, ready for a fight like that.
How do you think this fight is going to play out?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
How do you see this fight playing out?
My fight?
Yeah.
I think it's going to be exciting. You know, I think it's going to be what people want to see. A lot of action on the feet. And hopefully I get another knockout.
what do you think a win over Sergey Dustin? He is a big name.
I'm sorry, Gay.
What do you think a win over Sergey Dustin is?
What it does for me?
Yeah.
You know, hopefully moves me that's closer to the title, but more so I get more of a following and I get more attraction, you know, because he's got such a big name. That's my overall goal. Hopefully continue my knockout streak and then work our way to the belt. Get one of the rematches with the guys that beat me.
Yeah, a win here gets you a title shot. What's that going to be like, fighting for a belt or title?
I'm excited, man. You know, the belt's awesome. It's not my, you know, main goal, but to have it along the journey would be absolutely awesome. You know, I just like I say all the time, I like to fight. I like to stay active and make money.
You're someone that fought in February. So how did the pandemic not really affect you that much just because you got a fight in just before everything shut down?
Yeah, man. The timing of my life right now, I'm very lucky. I had the last card. Now I'm on the first card. So I can't complain. You know, I'm very thankful that, you know, I'm not sitting waiting months to fight. And because I know a lot of people are having a tough time with that. So I'm just very happy.
James Gallagher is a guy that keeps on talking your name. Do you think that's a rematch we see down the line?
Yeah, if he wants, man. I'm down to fight anybody. I'll fight the same guy 10 times. It doesn't matter. If he's the guy, he's the guy.
What do you think would be a bigger win, him or Pettis?
I think Pettis, because I already beat him, you know, and we beat him in amazing fashion, you know. I think I squeezed everything out of that fight I could get. So I would assume Pettis, you know.
Pettis is a guy that's 4 flyweight. Do you think you'll have a big size advantage?
I think so, because I normally have a size advantage at 35 with just your average bantamweight, let alone a guy coming up from flyweight. But as you see, you know, in his last fights, he fought 35 or some big guys, and he handles it very well.
He's a guy, good ground game, good striking, very well-rounded. Like, do you think this is going to be a stand-up fight, or do you think he's going to try to take you down?
I don't know, man. I hope it's a stand-up fight. You know, maybe he'll try and take me down because it seems like I have a loophole with that. You know, I have two of my 3 losses are chokes. Last fight I got caught in a choke with Fran, so maybe they'll try extort, you know, jump in and capitalize on that.
What's it like for you to see Bellator put this much trust in you to headline their first show?
Yeah, that means a lot, you know. It's exciting. You know, it shows that they think I'm up and coming. And they're giving me the platform to hopefully capitalize on beating Pettis and be the main event.
And going to be no fans there, obviously. What's that going to be like for you, fighting in front of no fans?
I don't know. I never did it. You know, it's like sparring. But a lot more on the line. So I'm excited to see how that goes. It's definitely different because the crowd does get me going. You know, the cheers, the boos, and that definitely gets your adrenaline going and keeps you going. So I don't know. We shall find out.
You're a guy that likes to be active. Like, I know a win here gets you a title shot, but if it's a long wait, would you fight again and kind of not wait for that title shot?
Yeah, I'd rather just fight again. You know, there's plenty of guys in the division that are killers. You know, I'd love to just mix it up. I don't want to sit and wait for, even if it's for the title. I hate waiting.
How many more fights do you want this year? Like, is the plan to get up just at least one more? So you have 3 this year? Or are you looking at 4 or 5 fights this year?
Whatever they offer. I know they said they want to have the same amount of events prior to Corona. So if they need a guy, I'm the guy. You know, 35, even fight 45. You know, as long as we keep winning and 5 times, it doesn't matter. Whatever they need.
Pettis is a guy that has some big wins. He's beat Joseph Benavidez, like, but he's a guy that's hard to finish. He's only ever been finished a couple times. Like, what do you think a finish win over him does for you?
I think it'd be huge because, like you said, he fought the top guys, Henry Cejudo, all the top guys in the world, and I don't believe anybody really finished him. So it would just make a statement on top of showing that I'm that good and one of the best in the world. It'll just put the cherry on the top.
ATT has a lot of good bantamweights. Marlon Moraes, Pedro Munhoz. Are those some of the guys you're working with?
I do work with them. Not this camp. This camp I worked with Randy Costa.
Oh, yeah.
Costa, maybe. I think. I don't, I'm not sure how to pronounce his last name, but did a lot of rounds with him, a lot of grappling. So he's one of the bigger names that I did a lot of work with because he fights like Pettis.
Yeah. He's a guy that's from New England. So did you bring him down, or is he someone that's just been in Florida during this time?
He just came to ATT. I think he's going to start training here. I think he came a couple months ago. I think he jumped ship like I did. So we, luckily he was here for this camp.
Get out of the cold weather in the winter too.
Yeah, that's. I never minded the cold, but now that I've been out of it, I don't ever want to go back.
I'm up in Canada, so the winters get pretty tough up here.
Yeah, that's rough.
With this one too, just a 3-round fight. You're a guy that you finish a lot of your fights, but do you think you're gonna be the one pushing the pace just because you are bigger and you have a good cardio?
I think so. 90% of my fights, I am coming forward. I am pushing the pace, trying to get the guy tired and going with pressure. So I believe that's going to be the case here. I'm just going to come forward and hopefully crack him.
You mentioned Randy Costa. He fights like Pettis. So how important has that look been? Just because Pettis has a weird style, but Costa really does it pretty well.
Yeah, besides him being way bigger, he fights just like him. And Pettis has a different style, Not many people fight like that, throw his kicks and his punches. So I'm lucky to have a guy that can emulate him.
Bellator's bantamweight division, one of the most stacked in their promotion. Do you have any names in mind of who you'd want to fight down the line?
If I had to pick, it would be one of Archuleta or Mix, just because I'm very competitive. I hate losing. I want to get them back. Other than that, they do have a crazy division. I've seen them signing so many guys, 19-1, 10-0, all these top prospects. So it's exciting to see what the future has.
You're a guy, even in the regional scenes, you beat people like Merab Dvalishvili, Tony Gravely. We see them in the UFC. Does that, do you root for them to have more success than it even looks better on you?
Yeah, same with James Gallagher. When they win, I win, and that's how I look at it. It makes me look better when they start kicking ass, or that Merab and Tony are in UFC, and when they dominate, it just shows that we can compete with the top guys.
Were you surprised you didn't get signed by a promotion like Bellator or UFC a lot sooner?
No, I'm not surprised, and I'm also not happy, because beginning of my career, I lacked the mental confidence. So lately it's been coming, I'm definitely a better fighter mentally. So if I would have went sooner, who knows how it would have played out.
How much better do you think you have been since going down to Florida? World-class coaches there, championship fighters, top-level fighters there. How much better do you feel?
I think I got, a huge, huge improvement in my game. Because, like I said, mental. Coming down here and I'm mixing up with these guys who are the best in the world, top 10, top 5 in the UFC, guys who have been in the fight game for years. And when I'm mixing it up with them and I'm doing well, it just lets me believe that, I do belong to fight, and I should be a professional fighter. Because prior to, you always question it, am I doing the right thing? Am I wasting my time? So coming here was great. And then you have the amazing coaches like Mo, Mike Brown. AT has a huge staff, gentleman Steve Bruno. You have got guys that just have so much knowledge, and they just share it with you, and it's only going to help.
Bellator does a lot of Grand Prix. Would you like to see them do a bantamweight Grand Prix?
Yeah, I would love that. That'd be exciting, I think that keeps you active too. And there's so many killers. It would be it'd be exciting.
Barring everything goes well next Friday, how quickly would you want to turn this thing around?
As long as we're not hurt, to follow. I think their next card's August. So I'll jump right on that.
And you're someone, you've traveled all around the world for fights, but now just going up to Connecticut, near your old stomping grounds, what's going to be like? You're so back near your home, where you grew up.
It's nice, going to Ireland was awesome. It was exciting. Definitely something off the bucket list. The crowd was amazing, but doing that, the travel and then cutting weight over there, I'd rather stay local, and Connecticut to me is pretty local. I fought there once before, but when I was living in Jersey, so it was only like a 2.5-hour drive. But Connecticut is still, I would pick that over some places.
Are you flying down there then, I assume?
Yes, I'll be flying. I leave Sunday.
What's fight week going to be like for you? Because obviously there's a lot of restrictions, the COVID testing and all that. Is it going to be a lot different, do you think?
Yeah, I definitely think. I don't know if you're allowed to leave the area. I know you're getting corona tested, so I'm not too sure what the itinerary is, but I can meet, imagine that's a little more strict. You know, you probably have to stay room bound a little more than going out and about. So looking forward to seeing what the game plan is.
Are you looking forward to that COVID testing? The thing, it's either going to be up the nose or down the mouth.
I pray it's the mouth. Then I never did the test at all, but the nose, that looks brutal. I watch it and I cringe. It's watching the videos.
Yeah, I don't think I could ever do that.
No, I hope it's a throw. I pray.
Main event two, Bellator's return. There's probably going to be a lot more viewers. Like, does that excite you where there's going to be more people tuning in just because this is Bellator's first show back? People are missing Bellator and you're going to be the one on the top of the card?
Yeah, dude. Definitely exciting. Like I said, you know, all this time off, so many more people, hopefully more people will tune in and get me, hopefully we have a great performance to get more recognition.
All right, well, Ricky, thank you so much for doing this. I really appreciate it.
No way, man. Thank you for having me. I truly appreciate it, and enjoy your day.
Yeah, you as well.